Dr. Fiona Foley is a renowned butchler visual artist and writer. And recently, she's been putting a spotlight on a brutal part of Queensland's history that saw Aboriginal workers being paid their wages in opium. As well as her prize-winning book, Biting the Clouds, which took home the Queensland Premier's Award last week, Fiona has created a photo series called Magna Carta that was published in the Griffith Review along with an accompanying essay. I spoke with Fiona about her work and telling stories across different mediums.
Stepping back in time for me is a place where you can think before the madness of the colonial project. So history in Queensland was quite brutal with the takeover of land and the killing apparatus that was targeting Aboriginal people on their homeland through the mounted native police force. So before all of that greed and destruction was taking place, one would have to assume that Australia was a type of utopia before the colonial brutality unfolded. That's how I view Australia.
There's been a lot of discussions in literary spaces about the interest that Blackfellas have in writing dystopian stories, is that we are living our ancestors' dystopia. I'm really fascinated by the way that you are working within that same idea, but in a photographic sense. What is magical realism from a visual point of view and from a photographic point of view?
Well, it really comes from literature world with South American writers like Isabel Allende and the other author whose name I can't remember, who's well known.
Gabriel Garcia Marquez?
Yes, that's right. So really comes from their writing, talking about magical realism. And so how do you reinterpret that in a visual way? Well, I think you just make up scenes that sort of connect to a type of spirituality that is not real. So I guess that's why the woman in the red dress appears in some of the scenes from the photographic series, The Magna Carta Tree. There's no rhyme or reason why she should be dressed like that in the Australian landscape, like a tea tree swamp, for instance. How does she configure in that arrangement? So there's no explanation why. She just is there. And that's a part of letting your imagination run wild, I guess, to create things that people haven't seen before in the world. I guess a part of my thinking is let's create new images that depict Aboriginal women in a beautiful way that hasn't been seen before.
In terms of stories we haven't heard or seen before, or at least not often, in your photo series you've included an image set in an opium den. What was the significance of that image?
The reasons why Aboriginal people were taken out of the township of Murrumburra was because opium was prolific in a lot of towns in Queensland up until the introduction of the legislation called the Aboriginal Protection and Restriction of the Sale of Opium Act 1897, and it was introduced shortly after it was passed. Late in that year, and Archibald Meston, the first protector of Aborigines in the South, set up a mission at White Cliff, which was relocated about 8 to 9 miles north of White Cliff to the Gimba Creek Mission. And he took across to the island in the first batch 51 butchler people who were living around the fringes of Murrumburra. And then another 23 Aboriginal people from that location a bunch of people followed. And it was the first experiment to take Aboriginal people and dry them out from the effects of taking opium ash, which was given to a lot of Aboriginal people to addict them as a free labour force for various industries in Queensland. So Maribyrra, the white folk were complaining of the eyesore of bachelor people in a bedraggled state around Maribyrra, so they wanted them rid of the township. So they accomplished that. And then the other thing is that today Maribyrra is very well known for a particular woman, a festival, a bronze sculpture, traffic light, and a dedicated building, which is to Mary Poppins. And it's the author who was born in Maribyrra but didn't live there for a very long time. So all of the tourism hinges on the Mary Poppins story in Maribyrra. The story of opium and bachelor people in Maribyrra is practically non-existent. It's a continuation of writing Aboriginal people out of history, which I object to, and that's what invigorates me to do the work that I do, either as a writer through the academy or either as an artist making photographs. And I think that's really important to talk about this history, that if we don't, as a bachelor person, then the white folk of Maribyrra certainly not going to talk about it because they don't know about it, but they would also be ashamed of their history.
It's such a brutal thing for bachelor people to have gone through. Do you get people kind of pushing back about like why you as a bachelor person would want to acknowledge it?
No, because most people pretend they don't read what you've written. They don't connect the dots that you make as a visual artist. It's all this other realm of non-acknowledgement. Therefore, I don't have to deal with it. It's another form of silencing, put it like that. Alain Morton Robinson, the well-known academic, talks about it as disregard. So there's disregard. If there's disregard for the work and the writing and the looking and the conversation to engage, then it means that it's another form of silencing that can quite easily happen in white society today. So you go to Harvey Bay and there is signage along the esplanade, but it's a history of bachelor people that's shared with the local fauna and fauna on the same signage. The same thing is repeated with the signage on Gari on Fraser Island. Bachelor people share the signage with the local flora and fauna. Go to Lake Mackenzie, one of the tourist beauty spots. Bachelor people share the signage with flora and fauna. This is a layer of thinking about tourism. That's what Aboriginal people, because they don't interact with tourists, the millions of tourists that go to Fraser Island every year because we were taken off the island in 1904. We're not allowed to build houses there and live anymore. So most tourists don't have an opportunity to meet a bachelor person. So their only interaction is with the signage at these beauty spots on the island. Lake Mackenzie is just one example where a signage exists. But how degrading is that? We're lumped in with the local flora and fauna. And that's the level of tourism that currently exists in the state of Queensland. Like, I would love to be able to do public, big million-dollar projects on Fraser Island, public art projects, but, you know, there's no money available for that. So there's always this cultural denial of what they will profile and what they won't profile. They will profile Mary Poppins, but anything to do with bachelor people on bachelor country has to go through all these loopholes.
Because you work across different mediums, do you find that people are more open to challenging narratives when it's photography or when it's writing? Or
I haven't found writing over, you know, the creative art to be this or that. I think you still have an impact whether it is one level of expression or another level of expression. I think they can work hand in hand, hence the article in Griffiths Review, which is both the written word and the photographic series. So I think that works really well together. I think they both add weight to the level of engagement by a readership or an audience to a gallery. I think they're equally weighted.
Dr. Fiona Foley speaking with me from Queensland. This is Away, Indigenous Art and Culture on Radio National. You're here with me, Rudy Bremer.